Hello, everyone, and welcome to the new Behind the Numbers show, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Mountain. I'm your host, Insider Intelligence Principal Analyst Andrew Lipsman. Today is Wednesday, February 2nd. And you're listening to the new bi-weekly retail show where we talk about how retail is colliding with every part of our lives and what happens next. I should mention that in the first three episodes of this show, I was joined by my co-host, Susie David Canyon. Going forward, Susie and I will alternate hosting duties for most episodes, and that will give us a chance to talk to some of the most interesting thought leaders across the retail industry. But first, let's begin with an opening segment. What does this have to do with retail? Where I take a look at a recent headline that you didn't think had anything to do with retail, but actually does. Today's headline comes from a big scoop from the Wall Street Journal, Microsoft to buy Activision Blizzard, an all-cash deal valued at $75 billion. So what does this have to do with retail? I think what's flying under the radar here is that this is actually another huge acquisition to bolster Microsoft's aggressive pursuit of the future of advertising. So when we think about Microsoft advertising, they've had the Bing and LinkedIn assets for a while. And then a couple of years ago, they acquired PromoteIQ to get a foothold in the retail media space. And then more recently, two big acquisitions. The first was Xandr, which bolsters their ad tech and connected TV capabilities, and now Activision, which I see as a huge new front in the emerging in-game advertising market. At the same time that they're pursuing the future of advertising, they're pursuing the future of retail. They're building out their physical store operating system with very futuristic store tech, including dynamic pricing, digital media signage, and all of that, I think, is eventually going to go hand in hand with its advertising strategy. So I see Microsoft as skating to where the puck is going in both advertising and commerce. I think they're about to become a much bigger player on both fronts, and it's something you may not have thought about when you saw that Activision Blizzard headline. With that, let's dig into today's episode. So we're going to be talking all about retail media. In the first half of the show, I'll be talking shop with Russ Derringer, founder of Stratably, about the soap opera and palace intrigue surrounding the top executives in retail media today. We've been talking a lot about the rise of retail media as a market, but not a lot about the key players driving the market forward. There's a ton going on at companies like Walmart, Instacart, and Amazon, and more importantly, this has huge implications for the future of these businesses. In the second half of the show, we have some pop-up rankings where we'll discuss what we think are the four most important retail media trends of 2022. All right, time now for Talking Shop. And as I mentioned, I'm joined by Russ Derringer of Stratably, an organization that creates hyper-relevant research consumer brand professionals read, share, discuss, and apply. He launched the business in 2021 and already has over 160 companies regularly receiving his insights on Amazon and its rivals. Welcome to the show, Russ, and why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're working on today at Stratably?
Yeah, thanks so much, Andrew. Thanks for having me, and I'm excited to talk about retail media. So Stratably, like you mentioned, I started the business a little bit less than a year ago, and I focus on topics that are really relevant to people inside of established consumer brands that work on the e-commerce team. So if you're a VP of e-commerce, you're a national account manager on Amazon, or maybe you're responsible for running the Walmart.com business. I try to cover all of the relevant topics for those types of individuals, really trying to do two things. One is to help them stay on top of the market. If you're working in this space, you know how dynamic it is. It's very challenging to stay on top of the market, but also try to give them materials and insight that they can use to help educate their organization. That's one of the things that I've found over the years working in this space. You know, the e-commerce team is often very knowledgeable in this space, but much of their organization really isn't. And so I try to arm them with the right materials to help educate their company so that they can invest in the right capabilities and develop the right strategy to really excel online. So Stratably is all about analysis around digital commerce. It's for digital commerce professionals inside of those manufacturers.
And I stumbled across Russ for our audience because he was talking about a lot of really interesting ahead of the curve things about Amazon advertising. I've covered that space really closely. So whenever I see somebody with some unique insight, I tend to pay attention, and Russ had me interested. I get his newsletter every week, and it's a must read to scan and see, you know, all the key things that are happening in this space. So I'm really excited to talk to him today about retail media and some of the executive intrigue surrounding it. So Russ, let's jump right into things. I wanted to start off our discussion today by talking about somebody who I consider the most interesting person in retail media, and that is Walmart's Chief Revenue Officer, Seth Dallaire. For those who don't know, he was actually one of the principal people who built Amazon's advertising business in its early days, which flew under the radar for many years. I think he saw the potential for retail media before anyone else really knew the implications for what was going on. In 2019, then, he took on the role of Chief Revenue Officer at Instacart, presumably seeing the potential in this platform that has unparalleled visibility into grocery retailers across the country and the potential to drive ad revenue as CPG ad dollars started to migrate online. I think he made pretty quick work of helping scale Instacart's ad business using a playbook pretty similar in ways to what he did at Amazon. Now, more recently, there were some major changes in the executive ranks at Instacart. The company appointed a new CEO, Fiji Simo, and a new president, Carolyn Everson, both of them coming from Facebook and both with advertising chops. So all of a sudden, Mr. Dallaire went from running the show on the ad business to maybe being number three in the pecking order. Shortly thereafter, and perhaps not surprisingly, it was announced that he would assume the Chief Revenue Officer title at Walmart, taking the reins on building out their ad business. Russ, tell me, what are you expecting from Seth Dallaire as he takes over Walmart's ad business? And what do you think he needs to focus on?
So he is very well respected inside the digital commerce ecosystem. There's nothing but positive feedback on him. And there's such enormous potential at Walmart, you know, of course, the largest retailer, a lot of momentum and progress in its advertising business. However, there's real challenges in front of him in this new role. First, there's a lot of executive turnover inside of Walmart in the last month, even including the head of e-commerce. There's sort of a history of differences of opinion internally at Walmart in terms of where to invest and what's really driving the business. Is it stores? Is it digital? They're trying to overcome some of those things. But, you know, even now I'm hearing that there's sort of conflict internally around the Walmart Connect team fighting for dollars inside of brands that the Walmart Luminate team is also fighting for. So a lot of organizational challenges, I think, continue to persist there. And I think, you know, that's likely larger than any one person, you know, to overcome. So that's going to be key. I think one of the other challenges that he's going to have to tackle is to attract more and more ad talent to Bentonville. You know, that's going to be a key piece of lasting success for its advertising business and enable it to move faster, which accelerating the pace of development within Walmart Connect is critical. You know, you've got to get the trade desk up and running. You've got to get auction density higher. You just have to really get that business more along the same playing field as what Amazon's doing with its advertising business. And I think ultimately that, you know, the big challenge for him, which will be unique in this role relative to when he was at Amazon and Instacart, is how do you really truly leverage those stores? You know, this is really Walmart's big advantage, right? The differentiated advantage compared to Amazon, but it hasn't necessarily been able to really leverage this within its advertising business. So can he improve attribution? Can he improve measurement in terms of digital advertising's impact to stores? That's going to be really crucial to attracting significant more advertising dollars from the manufacturer community.
Yeah, Russ, I love that you bring in the organizational perspective. One of the things I've learned a lot from you is how to see and understand what's going on within the organization, because I think we both see the potential here, but where the rubber hits the road a lot of the time is how do you make large organizations change? And as you mentioned, there's tons of channel conflict. And this has been going on for a long time between the physical store side of the business and the .com side of the business. And I think Walmart also probably has to contend with, you know, the challenge of Wall Street demanding profitability from them in a way that Amazon isn't always held to account in the same way. So, you know, what may be a worthwhile long-term investment may end up causing some strain for them, you know, on near-term earnings.
Exactly. And so they sort of have to like walk that fine line between those two things where, you know, that's one of Amazon's advantages is they're treated as a technology company and they've done a, you know, great multi-decade job of painting a vision of the future and engendering patience amongst their investor base. And the traditional retailers don't, you know, necessarily have, you know, that luxury that Amazon's developed. So we'll see. You know, it's the next couple of years are going to be very, very important. But if it doesn't work out for him here, I'm not sure I'm not sure where he goes from here because he's had some really interesting positions at the top companies. So I hope it works out for him.
He's already completed the trifecta only really a few years into retail media's existence. That's pretty impressive.
Exactly.
You also mentioned offline attribution data. I mean, that seems like such a huge competitive advantage for Walmart given their brick and mortar footprint.
I think so. I think it's more theoretical though at the moment than it is a reality. You know, they're trying to do more modeled attribution in terms of the store impact from the digital business and digital advertising, but it's not, I'll use quote marks that your listeners can't see, but I'm using quote marks around modeled. It's not pure closed loop reporting like what they would want to be able to truly, truly market. There's still a lot of ground and progress to be made in that space. And if they can do it, you know, that's going to unlock, you know, quite a bit of interest from their brand partners. And they're going to, you know, really open the floodgates in terms of money flowing towards that ad business. But it just isn't there yet. And look, it's very complex and complicated to do that, but they do have a shot at it. And so that's going to be key, I think, for them over the next year is can they really make progress from an attribution perspective? Because Amazon, you know, keeps improving attribution and measurement. They're not perfect either, but they're much further ahead.
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity. And it sounds like Seth Dallaire has his work cut out for him. You know, at Instacart, he didn't really have to deal with that offline sales data in the same way. They were seeing the transactions all through a digital storefront. So let's talk a bit about Instacart, where he came from. As I mentioned, new CEO, Fiji Simo, and then they also brought in a president from Facebook, Carolyn Everson. So back in July 2021, Instacart CEO Apoorva Mehta stepped aside and named Fiji Simo CEO of the company. She had actually joined the company's board earlier in 2021, so she already had some visibility into the business. I mentioned her Facebook background, but I should also mention that she came from product roles primarily, including heading up Facebook's Big Blue app, so pretty lofty position. And this directly drove Facebook's ads business. So she comes in with some pretty big time product and advertising credentials. The following month, it was announced Carolyn Everson would join her at Instacart as president. Like Simo, she had a huge role at Facebook as well. She was Sheryl Sandberg's, one of her key lieutenants, and her responsibilities included managing Facebook's large brand advertising clients. She was a public face of the company and helped them navigate through the advertiser boycott in 2020 and was clearly known as just a great relationship builder with brands. So Russ, when you see these two execs come into Instacart, what did that signal to you about the company and the direction it was headed?
I think at the time, Instacart hadn't necessarily picked a path. And what I mean by that is, were they going to be a services company to grocers or were they going to be sort of like a frenemy, so to speak, to their grocery partners, either, you know, doing direct commerce with consumers and or taking so much of the ad investment from brand manufacturers that it would hurt grocery store programs with their brands. And so I think with her coming in, the first part of that has been clarified. Ms. Simo, since she's been at the helm, she's been very much focused on positioning the company as a service provider to the grocery space. Like, we are going to help you, the grocer, compete from a digital perspective. So I think she brought that clarity to Instacart's strategy. You know, maybe that was partly driven by competition entering, a la DoorDash or Uber Eats, getting into online grocery delivery. But nonetheless, she seems very convicted in that direction. Now, I think the latter question around advertising and ad investment is still to be determined around the data and the value that Instacart has. Advertising is a crucial part of Instacart's business, and she said that publicly. She certainly has very impressive experience in that area, and I think her appointment means Instacart's going to continue to build that out. But at the same time, her challenge is going to be kind of like Seth Dallaire's challenge, is going to be to walk that fine line, growing the overall pie with its grocery partners while also maximizing the ability to monetize the data that Instacart has.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, you know, I mentioned Simo comes in with product and advertising experience. It seems like of the two, in the near term at least, maybe she's chosen the product and kind of services capability to grocers, perhaps realizing that the ads business, which is going to be really important, doesn't exist if you don't have that first thing accounted for. There's also, if we think about the future of the company, we've had these longstanding rumors about an upcoming IPO. It was thought that it would happen in 2021, didn't happen. And then also some rumors about being acquired by DoorDash. Do you think that has factored into Instacart's thinking at all?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. I think Instacart wants to remain an independent company. I think they're, with the initial stage of the pandemic, you know, they just saw such explosive growth and the grocers were so thankful that Instacart existed because it allowed them to essentially operate. And then in the second part of the pandemic, grocers started to get a little bit worried and started to think, well, boy, Instacart's going to be so powerful and they're kind of running this whole digital business. Like, what is our role as a grocer? And they started to get nervous and that started to get published in the media and that kind of narrative that Instacart was going to be a competitor sort of picked up steam. And meanwhile, you saw online grocery sales start to decelerate quite a bit. So at the exact same time that their partners were getting nervous about their relationship, the business demand was slowing down. So I think when she came in parallel, I mean, they're not putting advertising aside to any stretch, but I think to your point, they really wanted to work on the product. They're making certain acquisitions to establish themselves as this true partner to grocers. And the IPO is almost separate. I think they couldn't go public with decelerating growth and with the executive turnover. I think it just would have been too difficult. And now we've seen quite a bit of a turn down in markets here. So we'll see what 2022 brings. But I just don't think they were going to be able to go public with that type of growth deceleration happening. So sort of like almost like going back into the trenches and focusing on the core business and with the anticipation of going public, you know, a year later than maybe what they had initially anticipated.
A victim of their own success. And we're seeing something in parallel here with Peloton, maybe that you grew too much during the heat of the pandemic. And then everyone starts to think, what have you done for me lately? So that the year over year revenue comps just get really difficult. And you may even have to go negative in the near term. And nobody wants to have to go public if the growth has flatlined. So, you know, in another recent surprise, then in December, it was announced that Carolyn Everson would be departing her role after only 3 months on the job, which is a pretty quick about face. Ad Age reported at the time that there was an email sent to brand partners indicating that there was a clear mismatch between our priorities and the role she wanted at this point in her career. Speaking about Everson, Russ, did you have a take on this news? I know that we're sort of speculating here, but anything that you would kind of read between the lines on that quick about face?
I think it's just turmoil at the top. You know, I think growth solves a lot of problems, and you can say that another way, which is growth hides a lot of problems. So like I was saying earlier, with the first part of the pandemic, Instacart was growing like crazy and it was just like, man, it was a rocket ship. And then when it starts to lap that and grow slow, maybe that turmoil is just playing into, you know, how they're set up at the senior leadership level. And Fujisimo brought in Carolyn Everson pretty quickly. Maybe she didn't have a full handle on the business and she brought her in and it wasn't a good fit. So I think it's almost just growing pains, so to speak.
Yeah, I think you're taking the Occam's razor point of view here, which is probably the right one. The simplest explanation is usually correct. But I have to say that when I saw the news, I just wondered if there was more to it. And I thought the mismatch between priorities and the role she wanted at this point in her career. I mean, she had carved out a position that very much was similar to Sheryl Sandberg's position at Facebook, where it was overseeing public policy and affairs and things of that nature. And to me, I was like, huh, is there something going on where maybe there's going to be a deal made where that role that she wanted isn't going to be a reality? So that was kind of my speculative interest in it. But I think your explanation is probably more on the mark. So anyway, finally, on the Instacart front, it was recently reported that Fujisimo is going to be joining the board of directors at Shopify. Jason Goldberg, who most retail folks know, Chief Commerce Strategy Officer Publicis, noted in LinkedIn that he thought this was kind of a head scratcher since Shopify and Instacart are almost certainly going to become more and more competitive with each other, presumably both on the logistics and delivery side of things, as well as retail media advertising. Russ, any thoughts on this move?
So I'll take a little bit of a contrarian perspective. I don't necessarily see Shopify and Instacart as competitors down the line. I think Shopify wants to help sellers fulfill, but they, as has recently been reported, they've walked back that existing strategy, pulling back from their Shopify fulfillment network. And I actually think that Instacart could be more of a partner to Shopify than a competitor helping enable last mile delivery. So I actually don't think they're at odds as much as some others in the industry might think. My first reaction when I heard this was that they both kind of had the same message. Shopify's like big message is arm the rebels, and the rebels are fighting Amazon. Instacart has been very vocal since Fiji Simo has gotten in the role with its grocery partners that you have big bad Amazon working on grocery and you need to compete digitally. You need a digital service offering, and Instacart is going to help you fight a specific enemy, Amazon. So in that sense, I thought I felt the board appointment was very much a part of being aligned with this common enemy in mind, which is Amazon.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Yeah, you and I had the exact same take on this. I think the reality of going up against Amazon is going to require some partnership. And I see them, even though they're maybe will encroach in each other's territory, they're much more complementary in most ways. You know, they're serving different categories primarily. So I think there's some merit to potential partnership down the road. Lastly, let's talk about Amazon. So this is going back to an article from September where The Information had a really fascinating profile on Amazon Senior VP Paul Kotes, who heads up the company's advertising business. And they titled the piece, "The Mystery Man Who Made Amazon an Ad Giant." The article goes on to state, "Paul Kotes may be the most important person in internet advertising that almost nobody in advertising has ever heard of." Was this by design? The profile paints a picture of somebody who really doesn't need any spotlight, but it also suggests that his stealthy profile was perhaps to help Amazon fly below the radar as an advertising business for a long time, which they very much did. And a quick side note, Seth Dallaire, I believe, reported into Kotes when he was there, focusing more on the commercial strategy while Kotes took on more of a technical and product role. So Russ, the article states that next up for him is a push to snatch more dollars from TV ad budgets. I'm really curious, what's your take on where Amazon's ad business is headed, particularly as it pertains to TV ad budgets?
Retail media, and Amazon's the leader, right? Started with paid search, huge market. And what Amazon's done there is just incredible. I think the next phase is to go after those quote unquote brand budgets. Most brands have separate teams, separate budgets for brand versus trade. Amazon made a ton of progress on trade spend with its paid search. And the next leg is to try to unlock those brand budgets. And it has a lot of media assets to help with that. Thursday Night Football being one of them, Twitch, IMDb, TV, Prime Video, et cetera. So it's organizing, you know, around that goal of tapping into that big pool of brand dollars. And it's already having a fair amount of success with brands, convincing them that, you know, Amazon is more than just paid search.
And do you think the future of Amazon's ad budgets will come primarily from TV, or maybe that will be the biggest pool of new ad spend, or do you see it coming from other places?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that is definitely, you know, one of the pools of money. Anything like linear or traditional type of advertising continues to, you know, donate share to digital channels. I think one of the interesting areas to look at and monitor in 2022 is what happens with social budgets and with paid search budgets on Google. As privacy changes happen there and attribution and measurement and targeting get more challenging, does that make those platforms overall less effective? And does that then lead towards more dollars shifting into retail media, which, you know, again, Amazon is the leader in retail media. I think eMarketer, I'll probably misquote you guys, but it's something like 77% of the retail media market is owned by Amazon. So it's really, they stand to be a major beneficiary to any of those dollars leaking out of social and search. So I think, you know, linear TV, traditional type advertising, that's going to continue to see share. But maybe the more interesting one for 2022 is like, well, what happens with social? What happens with Google?
Good point. And you were dead on with that 77% market share, 77.7 to be a little bit more specific, but you were right on. With that, let's take time for a quick word from our sponsor, Mountain, and then we'll be right back.
Mountain is taking everything you love about paid search and social advertising and bringing it to the TV screen. Mountain Performance TV. is the world's first and only connected TV software platform that makes television advertising as easy as launching campaigns on paid search and social. Their self-serve platform makes it easy to choose your own audience, set your budget and goal, and see immediate results. Visit Mountain.com to learn more.
Okay, time for the second half of the show, and we have some pop-up rankings for you. And we're going to be sharing what we think are the four most critical retail media trends of 2022. All right, so Russ, you and I both took a crack at coming up with two of the top trends, and I will let you go first as my guest. What's your first one?
Okay, so my first big trend for 2022 is I think the rubber is going to meet the road on funding retail media. The industry really hasn't had to truly come to terms yet with how retail media is funded because they've had cost savings in the form of no travel, no sampling, a major reduction in any type of field sales efforts. And so when I've asked manufacturers that run retail media for these brands, you know, well, where's the money coming from? Is it TV? You know, is it social? And they point to all these programs that were cut because of the pandemic. As those activities come back, like what gives? You know, and there's different paths. Like maybe those activities won't come all the way back. You know, I think Pfizer was a recent company that laid off a large amount of its sales team because it's not flying around the country and the world doing sales meetings. It's all digital. So maybe travel doesn't necessarily come back as much as it was pre-pandemic, but a portion of it's going to come back. Sampling's going to come back. Field sales are going to come back. So what happens? Does retail media get cut? That seems like hard to envision because it's such a powerful model and every retailer's really, really pushing towards it. So I think, you know, that's one of the big questions for the industry is like, how does this stuff get funded? We've got very robust store-based programs. The retailers want incremental retail media dollars. We don't necessarily have that in our P&L. So something's got to give, and the industry just hasn't totally come to terms with that yet.
It's such a good point. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people about that budget question, and I ask, where is it coming from first? And the first answer is always incremental. But the last 2 years, you know, I think there's been this huge pool of incremental spending that is very atypical, right? If you have incremental, it's usually in much smaller proportion than you've had it these past couple of years. So it hasn't been a zero-sum game. And I think you're right. The question really happens is like, as those incremental budgets dry up and you have to pull from another budget and people within organizations are going to fight over it, what happens when it is zero-sum? Where does it come from?
Yeah, and I think with CPG companies, at least, their margins are under quite a bit of pressure as a result of inflation. And they've, you know, have continually passed through price increases, but, you know, there's certain limitations to that. And so I think 2022, we're going to see more of a question around or focus around profitability than what we've seen over the last couple of years. But retail media has got to be a part of a program with any of these major retailers, Amazon, Kroger, Walmart, Target, et cetera. And so how does it fit in to an overall, you know, program? You know, I think the other question around funding is it trade? Is it brand? Is it a combination? And this is the big debate in the industry. And I sort of think it just, all of this gets redefined and budgets get aimed more at sort of goals or outcomes rather than using an allocation by platform framework. So instead of saying, you know, we're going to, you know, Facebook is brand marketing and we're going to spend, you know, X percent on that, we're going to say, well, we have XYZ sales goal, or we're trying to drive this type of brand metric. And regardless of banner, so to speak, how do we go out and best achieve that? And maybe that's using Target, Kroger, and Facebook holistically as a part of a strategy rather than one team saying, okay, we're going to just use social channels and this other team over here can only do retail media. I think we're going to just see this kind of meshing together or blurring together and a redefinition around marketing. And one of the analysts I follow, Eric Seifert, he talks about all marketing is sort of performance marketing. And I think that's true. And I feel like the industry sort of understands that, but organizationally, like the teams are still pretty siloed and they have not come to terms with how retail media is funded from a retail program perspective, but also how it fits into a broader sort of media mix. And so will that all get resolved in 2022? Probably not. But I think a lot of companies are focused on it, and I think they're trying to get to a better answer on those things.
Yeah. And one place that I think it may come into play, this is my second trend, is connected TV. So you mentioned it's all performance marketing. I think that retail media is going to begin to aggressively expand into connected TV environments. And the implications of that are huge, because I think you're going to introduce performance marketing to what has traditionally been kind of the least measurable of all media, traditional TV viewing behavior. Why do I think it's going to see a major expansion this year into CTV? The first one is there's a huge watershed event happening this fall. Amazon gets exclusive rights to NFL Thursday Night Football. And so any large brand advertiser who's accustomed to advertising on those major tentpole, highly rated events is going to have to move into Amazon's advertising ecosystem. And I think it's going to be really interesting as they get access to Amazon's targeting data and then also are able to measure the impact of those advertisements on sales, particularly if you think about, you know, large consumer brands. The other key piece to this, I think, is you alluded to it before, Russ, the Walmart and Trade Desk partnership. It's going to start to get its legs underneath it. And as that happens, you know, Trade Desk has access to a lot of connected TV ad inventory. Walmart, as you mentioned, has these great assets that they will hopefully bring to bear. That also can really start to light up the possibilities when it comes to connected TV.
And maybe connected TV is where you bring these different parts of the organization together, because you're inside a big CPG brand and you're in marketing. You love TV advertising. Like, you love the creative element of that and the reach that can bring. But as you're suggesting, now that it's part of the performance marketing side, you're going to want to be working with the Amazon team, the e-commerce team, et cetera. So maybe that's sort of the catalyst towards bringing those different silos together.
Let's hope. All right, Russ, trend number three.
Yeah, so it actually kind of leads into my trend number three, where, you know, I think established brand manufacturers are going to evolve their organizational structure, their roles, and their processes around retail media. You know, if you're an omni-channel account lead and you're managing Walmart for your business, you really, at this point, you have to know how retail media works, its role, what it can and can't do for the brand in order to effectively negotiate with your counterparts at those retail partners. And so, you know, you're seeing more and more companies undertake like educational programs that try to get those omni-channel account leads up to speed. So that's breaking down some of this information asymmetry between teams. Another trend I hear within retail media is, you know, more specific roles are being hired now than ever before. So if you're a VP of e-commerce, you have to be sort of like smart enough to be able to hit the ball back. But those companies are hiring, you know, we need a PPC expert, we need programmatic experts on the team. So as retail media matures and grows in complexity, I think that's leading to more specialization internally as well.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, you just see the very traditional brands here. They're having to up their digital chops in so many different directions. And it's not necessarily their core competencies. So I think, you know, I would say a lot of consumer brands have come an extraordinarily long way in a relatively short period of time, but there's still room for all of this stuff to get sorted. And as you mentioned, the organizational structure itself needs to be reckoned with.
And I think there's also, you know, the space in the industry is relatively new. So there's like quite limited talent out there. So a lot of this is going to be like upskilling individuals inside the organization to take on, you know, these new roles. I mean, it is a fierce battle for talent right now in the space. So that'll be interesting to watch, but definitely a dimension on which these brands are competing is trying to find sort of the best people to run these very specialized programs for them. The other thing just around this is just the processes inside these organizations. And a big one that is going to be a competitive advantage with retail media and media more broadly is flexibility. So in budgeting, small brands have a ton of flexibility when it comes to allocating funding, whereas large brands really aspire to this. So large brands are going to be setting budgets, you know, typically one or two times per year. And they're going to really be at risk of missing out on unique opportunities that present themselves across all of these different platforms. A few years ago, you didn't have all of these different platforms. Well, now you do, but your budgeting process is still pretty rigid. So I think for brands, the goal is really to try to introduce more flexibility into their budgeting processes, give the retail media team more authority to move funding around. So that's kind of the other, you know, theme or trend that I'm watching for 2022 in terms of how companies operate.
It pays to be nimble in digital for sure. All right, let's jump to number four on the trend. So this one's mine. I think, and we've mentioned this already, but I think, and maybe I'm being optimistic here, but I think offline attribution data is going to become more integrated and actionable for brands this year. And I guess I start the conversation with Walmart and Kroger, two huge grocery footprints. Kroger has really great data chops and obviously the 84-51 heritage and being able to make that data actionable. Walmart, as we mentioned, I just think their cross-category data, online and offline, and the ability to get a really powerful feedback loop if you can see, if you market through Walmart Connect, if it's driving sales in store. So I think Walmart has a ton to gain. As you mentioned, the question is, to what extent can this data be brought to bear? What are the impediments? And also, how quickly can it be made actionable? What I've often heard is that, when the offline attribution data is accessible, it just comes on too much of a time delay. There's multi-week lags. But I have heard some rumblings that it's starting to get better, maybe, 1 week turnarounds, which, while it doesn't allow real-time optimizations, which I think is what's really powerful, it is good enough to, execute changes to campaigns while they're still in flight. And it's potentially just a way to unlock bigger budgets. So your thoughts on that, Russ?
Yeah, I agree. I think this is going to be the way they really unlock bigger budgets, because it's going to arm those account managers at those accounts to go back to their organization and say, look, like we can see the full picture and it's quite impactful, and that's going to help them make the case. So the good news is that every retailer knows like this is the challenge that they're facing. And so I think they're 100% aligned that we've really got to try to nail down attribution and measurement as best as we can. It's just complex, and it's just taking a long time. And I feel like some of the retailers have sort of oversold their current ability, but like, can we really make it happen this year? That's what everyone's excited about and enthused about. And I think most people are optimistic about it. So I think you're right. That's a big trend to watch for 22.
I don't think it's going to get perfected this year, but I do hope and expect to see some really meaningful progress that will start to change the equation. And what I'm really looking at too is, as you start to prove the value of offline purchase behavior, is that what really enables those shopper marketing dollars to migrate online in a much bigger way, because they're currently allocated to the products that are on the shelf in store?
Yeah, and this is, why you and the team at eMarketer are doing so much work around retail media and Amazon advertising, because this space is undergoing dramatic change. And whether or not, all this stuff happens in the next 12 months, that's unlikely. But over the next 3 years or 5 years, just fundamental transformation from how brands market to how they're organized to the types of roles inside the company. It's just fundamental transformation is happening, and we're just in the midst of it right now, and really probably the very beginning innings of it.
Well, Russ, I think that's a great place to leave it for the end of today's show. Thank you very much for joining me. And thanks to everyone who listened. We'll be back in a few weeks, February 16th, with another episode of Reimagining Retail. Tune in tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Mountain.